Thanks for listening to one of our messages at Crossroads Bible Church. We gather on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. in person and online. To find out more about our church or to connect to any of our ministries, visit our website at crossroadsbible.org. We hope you enjoy the message and pray it encourages you as you seek to follow Jesus.
Good morning, church. I'm Jim Copens, and this is my family. This is my wife, Kim, my son-in-law, Charles Spear, my daughter, Kayla Spear, and my mother-in-law, who's usually with us, took ill this morning, so she couldn't join us. If you could hold her up in prayer today, that would be great. So this is the fourth candle that we'll be lighting today, the candle of love in the Advent calendar. And how we celebrate love in our family at this time of year is to open up our hearts and our homes to friends and family to share what God has placed there.
Today's Old Testament reading is Psalm 103, verses 1 to 8. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and do not forget all his benefits. He forgives all your sin. He heals all your diseases. He redeems your life from the grave. He crowns you with faithful love and compassion. He satisfies you with good things. Your youth is renewed like the eagle. The Lord executes acts of righteousness and justice for all the oppressed. He revealed his ways to Moses, his deeds to the people of Israel. The Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in faithful love.
Today's New Testament reading is 1 John 4:7 through 9. Dear friends, let us love one another because love is from God. And everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God because God is love.
God's love was revealed among us in this way. God sent his one and only Son into the world so that we might live through him. So today, let's focus on being a people who share God's love.
Good morning, everyone. Don't we just love love? I've heard that it's all you need, although sometimes it feels like maybe we need more things. I am so glad to be here with you guys this morning. My name is Nick. I am the youth pastor here, and every once in a while, Charlie blesses me by giving me the opportunity to come and preach to you wonderful people. So let's get started with a story from ninth grade, shall we? So when I was in ninth grade, I was in love with this girl named Shauna. And Shauna treated me like you treat a small puppy that follows you around that won't leave you alone. Like, you kind of think it's cute, but you're not really, like, it's not really your puppy. I was her little puppy. I carried her books for her. I did all the things that I could possibly do to prove to her that I desperately loved her, but it didn't seem to really be working. So around Christmas time, I came up with a plan. It was a brilliant plan, and I'm going to tell it to you now. I had bought her a Christmas present. Honestly, I don't even remember what it was. I looked at it, or I looked into my brain and I couldn't find it. But I bought her a Christmas present and I was going to give her an even bigger Christmas present. I was going to tell her that I loved her. I was going to drop the L-bomb and she would be forced to say, I love you back, because that's what people do, right? You say, I love you, and they're like, oh, I love you too. And so I set a whole scene up, right? It was during lunch, and so we had some freedom, and so I was sitting by this gazebo, and I had written her a note in class before and gave it to her that said, please meet me at the gazebo during lunch. And so I had the Christmas present in my hand. It was beautifully wrapped by my mom, because I don't know how to do that. And I had my headphones on. Now, Shauna, one of her big things was she wanted me to learn how to listen to really good music. And so I, as a small puppy, I did whatever she told me to, and I assume that's how many Celine Dion and Smashing Pumpkins fans get started. And so I had some Celine Dion music playing around my headphones on my neck so it wasn't on my ears so I could hear, but so she could kind of hear it. So it would be like the subtext in the conversation, right? I thought this through. I'm no fool, okay? And so she finally comes, she's showing up, and I make sure that the song is on repeat. It was that one song, Because You Love Me by Celine Dion. I'm sure you all know it. I wanted that song so that she would hear it and think, oh, I am better because he loves me. Oh, yeah, that's what I was hoping for. Didn't work. But so I'm in the gazebo. It's winter time. It's cold. It's Christmassy. I've got my Christmas present. She shows up and I hand her the present and I say, Shauna, I have a second present for you. And here it is. I love you. It's pretty awkward, right? That's the general sense of what I received back from her, was basic silence. She took that present, didn't even open it, handed it back to me, and said, Nick, I've got to go. I don't like Celine Dion much anymore. I tolerate it, but it's I'm not really into it. You see, that really broke my heart. So I did what every ninth grade boy would do. I wrote a poem about it and read it in front of English class in which she was in the class. Now, it wasn't a mean poem. This was still part of my plan. It was a new plan. It was plan B, we'll call it, to get her to realize that she actually really does love me. So, and also, I had to do it for an assignment, so it was kind of killing two birds with one stone. So I wrote this poem for her, and it was very flowery. And again, I looked for it. I can't find it. I'm not that good at saving ridiculous things. So I got up in front of class. She's sitting there, and I read this poem. Now, it doesn't have her name in it, but I used a lot of words that rhymed with her name just to really nail it down so that she wouldn't be curious as to whether or not it was about her. And so I imagined that I would read this poem to her. She would start crying, and she would get up and hug me in front of everybody and turn around and declare to the entire ninth grade class, I love Nick. Instead, she cried and ran out of the room. and that was the last class of Christmas break, and I didn't see her again for like a month. And then when she came back, she never spoke to me again. So it didn't work. It did not work. I was shocked, to be honest. I was confused, and I did not understand why this tremendous act of love just didn't land for her. And for those of you who are sitting there thinking, isn't that from that movie, 10 Things I Hate About You? I did it first. It was before then. I thought, in my brilliant ninth grade brain, I thought that I did this thing for her out of love. That seemed to be what I was doing. But truthfully, I think I did it just to try to force her to love me. I don't think that's what love is. So today, guess what we're going to do? We're going to talk about what love actually is and how it is so far the opposite of what ninth grade Nick thought it was. So we're going to start with one of our wisest, most well-known church fathers, Augustine of Hippo. He addressed this issue. He called the sinner the person curved in on himself. The person curved in on himself. Now, Martin Luther opened this idea up a little bit, and he talked about it in a little bit more detail. He said, our nature, by the corruption of the first sin, being so deeply curved in on itself that it not only bends the best gifts of God towards itself and enjoys them, or rather even uses God himself in order to retain these gifts, but it also fails to realize that it so wickedly, curvedly, and viciously seeks all things, even God, for its own sake. The person curved in on himself does everything, even the things that look God and good and godly, for themselves. We twist and we bend and we curve inward all the good that God has given us for ourselves. More recently than Martin Luther, Anne Voskamp, a wonderful speaker, writer, and she actually was at the women's brunch last year. She wrote about it in this way, and she uses the Latin phrase that Augustine would have used. It's called incurvatus in se. This is how she talks about it. She says, my heart takes the way of incurvatus in se, this curving in towards self, self-sufficiency, self-protection, self-comfort, self-interest. It's the bent way of being human. We're wired for attachment, for dependence on God, but our inclination toward incurvatus and say turns the direction of our dependence towards destructive things, and our attachments go awry. So she points out how we are wired for attachment, dependence on God. But being curved inward causes us to attach ourselves to destructive things. Sin has made it so that we are born curved inward, focused on ourselves. Anyone who has or has ever interacted with small children knows this to be true. There are no two-year-olds sitting in the kids' room right now thinking to themselves what to get their mommy for Christmas. None of them are sitting there right now thinking, she might like a weighted blanket. Nobody's doing that. They're not doing that. They don't worry about that. They worry about what they're going to get because they're children. And that's what children do. Children think about themselves. We see this all the time. I myself have been guilty of this, only as a child, obviously. When I was a kid, I was mischievous, shocker, and I used to routinely hunt through the house for Christmas presents. We've all seen it or we know about this. It's a thing that kids do. They hunt for Christmas presents. And my mom was one that boasted wildly of no one being able to find her Christmas presents. So, of course, I had to prove that wrong. And so one day when I was probably 8 or 9, I found a big, giant box that I knew was for me, because it had the words G.I. Joe on it, and I have 2 younger sisters, and not to be sexist, but they didn't care about G.I. Joe. I did. I spent hours of my life playing G.I. Joe, having the G.I. Joe attack the Barbie or whatever other toys I could find. There were all-out wars happening at all times in my life with G.I. Joe versus whoever. So I knew that this present was for me, and it was a big, giant plastic bin that said G.I. Joe on it. So immediately I began to think, oh my gosh, she has gotten me a full box of all the G.I. Joes that could possibly fit in it. I was elated. I was so excited. I was so happy. And I opened it and it was empty. It's just a box. That's it. I was so deflated. I was so bummed. So much so that I broke the code of you find the Christmas presents, but you don't tell them you find the Christmas presents. And I went and said, Mom, what is this? Where's the G.I. Joes? And she, rightfully so, was slightly crestfallen at the fact that her dumb child was whining about the fact that his mother got him a lovely gift. It wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what I thought would bring me happiness. I wanted 100 G.I. Joes. All she did was get me a box to put my G.I. Joes in. How rude. How could she think to do this? Curved inward me thought, I don't need to show gratitude. I should just get what I want all the time. This is the way that we are born thinking, that we should get what we want all the time. Now, sometimes we grow out of this. We can become more outward focused as we grow older. But even there are still many ways in which even we as adults can be very selfish, very self-centered, very much about, I don't care what the cost is, just give me what I want. You can even look at slightly incredible examples as like the Colorado River is declining in rapid ways because we are stealing water from it to water lawns in places like Arizona and New Mexico where there are no lawns. We're making the Colorado River go away so that we can have green grass. That's not very curved outward. That's mostly just about having a pretty lawn. The way we use our natural resources in general, I'm not going to get into it, but there are so many ways that we can look at to say, wow, that's not really us trying to be better for the rest of the world. That's me trying to get stuff for me. We still do this. The person curved inward is all of us. A research study found that 68% of Americans describe themselves as selfish. We are a curved inward people. We are the bent humans. We are the ones whose heart lean towards incurvatus and say, so what do we do about it? And what the heck does this have to do with love? Well, let's look at what the Bible says. In Genesis 1:27, we know that we are made in the image of God. We are created in the image of God. Okay, that's an important thing to know. As was read this morning in 1 John 4:16, we know that God is love. So if you put those two things together, we are created in the image of God and God is love, then that means that we too are built, are wired to love. And you will love something. Your actions, your behavior, your thoughts will move towards the love of something. The question we need to ask today is that love curved inward onto yourself? And if it is, how do we point it back outwards to the world around us? How do we love God and others? The thing is, love is not easy. True love is difficult. And it requires the connection that, like Miss Voskamp talked about, that attachment to God. Another author named Khalil Gibran talks about it like this. He says, when you love, you should not say, God is in my heart, but rather, I am in the heart of God. You see, it's interesting when we think about it, this with this individualistic or curved inward way of loving, even the idea of saying God is in my heart has a rather individualistic bent. But if we were to say, I climb up into the heart of God and dwell there, that's a beautiful thing. And in 1 John 4:16, when he says, God is love and we abide in God, whoever abides in love abides in God, that's the same thing, that we are to climb into the heart of God. And the heart of God is a love that moves outward and not inward. We are built to love God. We are built to love people. But we start out loving ourselves above all else. Paul talks about it like this in 2 Timothy 3. He says, and he gives us a very long list. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. We are built to love. But is your love curved inward or is it pointed outward? Well, another question we have to ask then is, how do we know where our love is directed? How do we know where our love is pointed? You see, when I look at that dumb thing I did in ninth grade for that girl, that love was absolutely pointed inward. I was not thinking of what would she like? What would be good for her? What would cause her to know that I care about her? That's not what I was doing. I was doing that because I was good at writing poems and I liked the idea of doing it in front of everyone so she would be forced to confront my feelings. Also, I wanted to get a good grade. Like, those were all the reasons I did that, not because I thought, what would be best for her? That was a clearly inwardly curved act of love. Now, I want to make sure that you understand, I'm not saying it wasn't love. It was. It was just love for me. That was an act of love for myself, not for her. The evidence of true outward love is sacrifice. Here we get to our main text for the day. Now, this is a really obscure passage. I don't know if you're going to catch on to it, so make sure I read it exactly right. It's from John 3:16. It goes like this. This is probably new for a lot of you, so let me just read it nice and slow. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. God loves us, so he gave. And not just gave anything. He gave up that which was most valuable because of his love for us. And here in Advent and Christmas time, we can be reminded constantly of that great sacrifice that God made, that the Father gave to us so that we can be in right relationship with him. Philippians 2, 7 through 8 talks more about what this sacrifice was. He says, Jesus emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. What an enormous sacrifice for us. The true act of love is one of sacrifice for the flourishing of others. True love is sacrificing for the flourishing of others, and this love is not easy. This is a difficult love. Khalil Gibran again talks about it like this. He says, "For even as love crowns you, so shall he crucify you. Even as he is for your growth, so is he for your pruning. Even as he ascends to your height and caresses your tenderest branches that quiver in the sun, so shall he descend to your roots and shake them in the clinging to the earth." Love for the flourishing of others is difficult, dangerous, yet beautiful. We can understand the depth of God's love for us when we look closely at the Father's love for the Son. We can see in Matthew 3 and in chapter 17, twice we see the Father speak about the Son to everyone around, where he says, "This is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." And now again, those of us who have children or have been children know that there is a certain pride and love and joy and satisfaction that comes from when we see our children doing something awesome. It brings us so much joy. My oldest daughter is a ballerina. Kate, she loves ballet. It is her whole life. She is obsessed with it. And I would say probably about 3 years ago, something clicked when she performed. Something started to change where she was truly beginning to embody that grace that ballerinas have. And I remember we were at the Nutcracker performance a few years ago, and I just remember looking at her and saying, "Oh my gosh, that is amazing." I wanted to jump up and shout, "That's my daughter. Look at that. Forget all these other kids. Look at that one." My other daughter, Harper, she's a theater girl. She loves to do musicals and plays and perform. And I also loved to do that when I was younger. And so I got the very, very fortunate opportunity earlier this year to actually be in a musical with her. And we did The Music Man, and it was so much fun. And I remember breaking the rules constantly where they told us, "Don't be backstage unless you are about to go on stage." And I didn't care, because when my daughter went out there, I went backstage and I stared blankly at this beautiful little girl doing something she loved so much. And it brought me an endless amount of joy to just see her doing great things. So much so that it made me want to jump out on stage, stop the show, and say, "Everyone look at that girl. She's special." And my son, who plays soccer, which is what I did, and so there's all kinds of excitement wrapped up in that, but when he does something great on that field again, I just want to jump up and stop everything and say, "Look at these guys. Look at this one. He's special." John 5, 19 to 20 talks about another kind of this love. It says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of his own accord, but only what he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, that the Son does likewise. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all that he himself is doing." When I catch my kids doing something the way that I would do it, it fills me with a very strange sense of love and connection to them. Different than just seeing them do something good. Even if it's silly and dumb, like if I see them and I hear like my own voice or them using my own words, I'm like, "Oh, that's cute. That's interesting." And I don't even know how to define it. Like, I can look back at so many. I remember this one thing that we did when I was a kid. I remember we even took a picture of it. And here it is. No, I'm not going to show it to you because it's wildly embarrassing. My father and his brother and me and my two younger sisters, and in the Robinson family, everyone has this thing, right? We all have this little pouch thing that no matter what we do, just stays there. And so we took this picture sideways of all of us standing there doing this thing. And it's my grandfather, my father, my uncle, me, my younger sister, and my youngest sister all doing it. It is hilarious. And it was one of those moments where I look back and think, wow, even though that's so dumb, how much it must have made them feel connected and special, even as ridiculous as it was. And like last night, I remember my daughter was coming down the stairs and we made some joke at her, and then she started to mimic old people. She's coming down the stairs and she's like, "Oh, my back hurts. Oh, let me fall down the stairs." My sister fell down the stairs the night before. She's like just ripping us apart. It's hilarious. And I'm looking at her like, "I do that. That's funny." It made me feel this weird connection that I can't understand. And why I say this is to once again remind us of how deeply the Father loves the Son. For when the Father looked down on the Son and doing all the things that the Father told him to do, that love was so rich and deep. And that points back to the value of the sacrifice that the Father made for us. When we understand the love the Father has for the Son, we can more deeply understand the sacrifice that he gave. And when we understand the sacrifice, we can understand even more his great love for us. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that he sacrificed that one thing that he loved and valued above all. True love is sacrificing for the flourishing of others. See, as parents, we sacrifice for our kids all the time. Do you think I love driving all over DFW to take my kids to ballet, to theater, and to soccer? No, I don't love doing that. I kind of hate doing it, but I do it for their flourishing. I do it because I know it's what they need and what they want and what's good for them. And are they always grateful? No. I can't remember the last time I drove 40 minutes into Carrollton to drop my daughter off at ballet and she looked at me and said, "Dad, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. Let me give you a hug and sit with you for a minute and just tell you how much I love you." That's never gonna happen. Never. That's fine because that's not why I do it. If I was doing that, if I was doing all these things just so that she could say nice things to me, that's love curved inward. I do it because I know it makes her life better. I do it because I love her. I do it because I want her to be in, with all the people and doing the things that she loves. And as I sacrifice for them, I know that they see that. And I know that I'm modeling something for them that I desperately want them to do, is to live a life of loving sacrifice for the world around them. The word itself in Hebrew comes from the root korban. And that word, it's very interesting. It means to come near. The word sacrifice in Hebrew comes from the word to come near, to approach, to move closer, to move into a closer relationship. Showing our love for God used to literally be sacrifice, where we would kill an animal to sacrifice something that we cared about, that we needed, to show God that we loved him. And what that did is it brought us closer. Because our sacrifice shows love, it is something that draws us closer. Ann Voskamp says this about sacrifice. She says, "Sacrifice is not losing something, but moving closer to someone. Sacrifice isn't about loss. Sacrifice is about love. Sacrifice is about detaching from one thing to attach to a greater thing. When we love sacrificially, we break attachment from something that we cared about, and we give that attachment to someone that we love." Now, a brief word of warning about sacrificial love. As I said before, it's difficult and it's dangerous. It is important to know your limits. In the same way that I can't give my kids every single thing that they want for Christmas, or else I'd have to also give away the house that we live in, like, I can't give all the things that they want. In the same way, I can't give everything I have to someone else. Many of us have probably been there before where we have sacrificed so much for another person that we begin to resent them. Many of us have probably given so much to one person that we begin to feel anger towards them because they're not giving back what we feel we're deserved. There's a point where the beauty of sacrifice itself can be turned inward. I'm a part of this leadership group and we do a lot of really cool things. And one time we went to this stable for this lesson, this object lesson. It was very interesting. I was chosen to stand in the stable and pet a horse, right? And every few seconds, someone would come and just hand me a thing and say, "Hey, can you hold this?" And I'd say, "Sure." And they'd come in and hand me a brush. They'd come in and hand me a piece of a saddle. Or they'd come in and hand me some strap. And eventually, I'm standing there trying to brush this horse, and I'm holding like a saddle on my shoulders. I've got ropes. I've got stuff balanced on my head because every time someone says, "Hey, come hold this," I keep saying, "Yes, sure." Because I was told that's the point of the exercise. And so I begin to feel this competitive nature well up within me, like, I'm going to hold more than everybody. And so I'm literally holding several saddles, ropes, stuff. I've got my leg up trying to hold something. And I'm also at the same time like trying to brush this horse with my hand like a claw, right? And there's other people who've started saying no. Other people in the exercise have said, no, I can't take anymore. But I'm like, no, 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 give it to me. I'll do it. I heard them say, no, give it to me, give it to me, give it to me. And I think it's so funny. And I'm like, yes, I'm winning this game. I'm the one winning the game. Until finally somebody else said, I can't do this anymore. And they stopped the exercise because lo and behold, that was the point. To learn your limits. Because eventually I started to get angry. Eventually I started to get annoyed that they kept giving me things and I was in pain. My arms were hurting. And just to drive the point in a little bit more, they made us come out and stand and listen to the whole debrief while holding our things so that it really locked in on my brain that sacrificial love is wonderful and beautiful and dangerous. And if we don't know and test our limits, it can create an inward form of sacrificial love that brings anger and pain. We cannot say yes all the time. But here's our fact that we need to sit with this morning. We are built to love no matter what. You will love something. Is that love curved inward or is it pointed outward? Because see, turning an inward curve to a point outward cannot be done quickly or easily. Think of like a metal rod that is curved inward. You can't just grab it and twist it straight. It will break. It will crack. It takes time. It takes heat. It takes water. It takes the right tools. It takes effort to do this thing. There are so many ways that we can curve our love from inward to outward. Investigating the life of Jesus, as we look at this story of Advent, we can see the great act of sacrificial love, and we can look at the rest of the story of Jesus and see his constant acts of outward love for the world around him, where he constantly sacrificed and yet still even knew his own limits. We can show your love for God. We can show our love for God and others through sacrifice. By looking at the people around us and saying, what can I do for them? What can I do for you? How can I give of myself so that I might attach better to you? John 3:16 tells us a story of what God gave up. He gave up what was most dear. And not for gratitude, not for anything other than a desire for us to know that he loves us, so that we might be able to attach to him. So what are we giving up for others? Not just your family, but your friends, your coworkers, people that don't like you. God calls us to love all of them. What are you giving up for people? How can you do more? What are we giving up for God? How are we giving a sacrificial love to him? You know, yesterday we did this thing at the church called the Big Give. It was really amazing. Families come and we give them money and ideas of how to go give that money away. How to go bless somebody right now to make their lives better. And it's a wonderful thing that we send them out and they come back and they tell us of the changes that they saw and the good things that they did. And it is a wonderful, wonderful thing. That's a very good example of outward love. We're giving up time, we're giving up money, we're giving up all the things that we would typically like to keep for ourselves. True love is sacrifice for the flourishing of others. It is not sacrificing to get somebody to do something that you want. It's not sacrificing to get gratitude. It's not sacrificing so much that you grow bitter and angry about it. True love is sacrificing for the flourishing of others, and it is as easy as twisting a curved metal rod outward. But as we love sacrificially, we will begin to see others flourish, and that will add to our own joy and our own flourishing. When I see my kids do something selfless, more than seeing them do something great on stage, more than seeing them mimic me, but when I see them actually doing something for the flourishing of others, I can't even believe it sometimes. And I'd love to sit here and list off example after example after example, but they're in process. I've seen it, and it's beautiful. That's what we're shooting for here. Sacrificial love for the flourishing of others, for those closest to us, for those beyond our families. We love sacrificially for the flourishing of others. We detach from those things that we think we need and attach to people that we need to love. For we are made in the image of God, and God is love, so you will love. Will you love inward, or will you love outward? Let me pray. Father, your love for us abounds beyond what we can even measure. God, even the example that you give us in John 3:16 is difficult to fathom, the depth and enormity of that love. So God, we ask this morning that you help us to connect into that, that you help us to abide in that love, so that when we leave this place, we can begin to twist that metal of love outward, so that the world might be made better as we enter it. God, we know that you called us to love you and to love others, and we know that you did that for the flourishing of them and ourselves. So help us this morning to understand that, to really ask that question of ourselves. God, let the Holy Spirit weigh on us that we might know how to love the world around us better, how to love you better. And during this wonderful season where we remember the great sacrifice you made for us by coming down and emptying yourself for us, that we would bring that love outward to the people. It's in your wonderful, strong name of Son of God, Jesus, we pray. Amen.